Obviously, our subject today will be approaching Rosh Hashanah. First of all, I'm again apologizing for confusion with last night today. And again, I'm offering anybody who wants to give me the emails, well, that's just to make sure to notify you in cases of change. So our subject today is obviously approaching the Yom HaDin. What I want to try to do today is give a little bit of a proper balanced perspective, because there are two almost conflicting feelings in a way of consciousness that we have to approach the Yemei HaDin with, and when one crowds out the other, problems begin. So what sort of problems do I mean? So I'll just give one example. There was in the yeshiva, in the Be'er Yaakov yeshiva, a very intense yeshiva. The atmosphere before the Yemei HaDin, before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, was very charged and intense. And they very much stressed the need to approach it with the proper awe and with the proper trepidation, to improve yourself and try to make yourself as worthy as possible. And one boy was, by the time Rosh Hashanah hit, he was already so worked up and so nervous, and he really got caught up with the atmosphere to the extent that he just got himself depressed, and he was just basically couldn't come out of his room. He was just so nervous, and so that's how he went into Rosh Hashanah. So the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Shmuel Shapira, Zechayna Levracha, he was one of the big gedolim of our generation, also was known for his musical nature, and he used to, when he sat and learned, compose tunes as he went along. So he came into this boy's room, and he started trying to talk to him and encourage him, etc. But the boy was hard to talk to him at all. So finally he sat down and he, on the spot, composed a tune to the words of Psukim in Ezra that also described how there was a Rosh Hashanah. When Ezra came back to Eretz Yisrael, he found that the Jews were in a very dismal state. Many Jews had married non-Jews. There was assimilation going on in Eretz Yisrael. The Jews were in a very bad state. He really got them together and gave it to them over the head. And made them fully aware of the depths they had sunk to. And they took it very seriously. And then when Rosh Hashanah hit, it says the entire nation was weeping. Everybody was weeping. So Ezra told them an interesting thing, which you wouldn't think necessarily is what you would hear on Rosh Hashanah. He said, "Ichlu ma'adanim ushsu mamtakim v'shulchu mana yisla'ein nochem lay." He said, "No, you have the wrong approach. Go home, eat delicacies, drink sweet drinks, sweetened wines, and make sure that everybody around has a good meal." Meaning all of a sudden he's turning Rosh Hashanah into a Yom Tov. Naturally you wouldn't necessarily approach Rosh Hashanah as a Yom Tov. Rosh Hashanah is a scary day. Perhaps a person should, right? It says in earlier times when a condemned man came to court, he wore black clothing. The person was being tried. Wore black clothing. Maybe we should wear black clothing on Rosh Hashanah. Maybe we should be fasting on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is a scary day. It's a scarier day than Yom Kippur. The truth is that there were those who had a minig to fast on Rosh Hashanah. It's kind of acknowledged in halacha, even though the general halacha is not to. But it's acknowledged in halacha that there is such a concept, and there were people who did it. There were people who fasted on Rosh Hashanah. And one might think that that's the natural way to approach Rosh Hashanah. But yet this pasuk is saying, "Ichlu ma'adanim ushsu mamtakim v'shulchu mana yisla'ein nochem lay." Go home, eat delicacies, drink good drinks. Ki chedvas Hashem hi ma'uzchem. I'm forgetting the exact order of the words, but of the pasuk. But it says, "Ki kadosh Hashem adenenu v'chedvas Hashem hima uzchem." Ah, you might ask, How can I be sitting down for a festive meal on Rosh Hashanah? It is a scary day. Your life is in the balance. Your future is in the balance. He says, no. Rejoicing with Hashem is your stronghold. Meaning, you can take refuge in that fact. Va'al teyotze, don't be sad, he tells them. So Rabbi Shmuel Shapira composed a tune to these words and sang it to this depressed boy until he finally got him out of his mood. But the truth is that it remains to be understood. What indeed is the understanding? At the end of the day, Rosh Hashanah is a Yom Hadin. It is a day of judgment. At the end of the day, it's like we say in the Sana Tekev, you have the full solemnity of the day. Who's going to live? Who's going to die? Who's going to be put through suffering? Who's going to be put through a peaceful life? This is what's going on Rosh Hashanah. It's also why we don't say Hallel on Rosh Hashanah. So how did the two come together? And this is what I mean when I say that there's a balance. There's a balance. It's difficult to get right, but it's very important to get it right. So I want to step back for a minute and approach this. Again, stepping away from Rosh Hashanah. Shimshon Pinkus cited a sefer from one of the earlier generations who wrote that at the end of time, the other religions won't be held accountable for their mistakes, meaning for worshipping the wrong ones, because they'll say to Hashem, look, it's a mashal like this. Yes, we worship the wrong gods. We worship the wrong gods. What the mashal is? It's a mashal like a person who went around from town to town imposing as the king. Disguised himself as the king. He went from town to town claiming to be the king. Dressed himself in royal garments, got himself an entourage, a bunch of his pals. Went from town to town claiming to be the king. And all the townspeople came out to greet him, and they cheered for him, and they gave him gifts. And he went from town to town doing this until he was caught and he was executed. But the king was very angry, not only at the imposter, he was very angry at the people of these towns also. To pay homage to a person who's not the king is a criminal offense. That's high treason. And now these people were facing capital charges. How could you say long live the king to a person who isn't the king? That's a form of rebellion. So the people came with the following defense to the king. They said, on the contrary, the only reason we paid him that homage is because we thought he was you. We were actually honoring you. Right? All the honor that we gave to him was really directed towards you. Just, he got us to think that he's you. But we were paying homage to somebody else. We weren't paying homage to somebody else. We were paying homage to you. So, therefore, he says, You're gonna twist your back like that. You okay like that? Okay. So he says, therefore, he says, the nations of the world will also say to Hashem, yes, we worshipped all kinds of, other gods. But that's a rebellion against you. No, it's because we were misled to think that that is you. And therefore they won't be held accountable. So Shimshon Pinkus said, Chas v'shalom. He said, the mashal is off. They certainly will be held accountable. And he said, the mashal is very off. He said, you know what a more apt mashal would be? More apt mashal would be that some people looking for jest took a pig around. They took a pig on a leash. And they came to towns and they said, this is the king. Pig just rolled in the mud and rolled in all the filth. And said, this is the king. And all the people of the town came out and said, oh, that pig is the king, and they cheered and they threw confetti on it. And afterwards the king comes with tinus. Why did you pay homage to someone else? And they say, oh well, we thought that was the king. Is that a good defense? That's even more of an accusation. You thought the pig was me? You thought I'm a pig? You thought that's how I look? It's gonna get you into even deeper trouble. That's adding insult to injury. So Shimshon Pinkus said, well, the nations of the world are going to come and say, well, we thought that was you. Who'd you think was me? Right? Some bum, some mamzer named Yoshka, right? You, that's who you thought was me? You're coming in saying you're in defense. Oh, we thought it was you. That, that, that honor, that homage was really directed towards you. Who are you confusing with me? Right? Or all the gods of the Hindus, all this trash, all this garbage, that's how you thought I was. That's going to be even more of get you even into even deeper trouble. It's not an excuse. In other words, a person can think that he's worshipping Hashem, but when he has a very, very wrong concept of Hashem, that itself is a claim against him. I want to take this to a little bit of a subtler level. Yes, sometimes you can have people who are really worshipping Hashem from Jews, but they have a distorted picture of who Hashem is. A distorted picture of who Hashem is. Let's say, for example, right, people who think, so they don't think that Yashka is Hashem, chas v'shalom, but they think that Hashem is a physical being. That's another form of the same thing. It's a little bit less of an offense. Actually, the truth, I'm not sure. Each one has, you know, its pros and cons, or cons and cons, right? But no, they think Hashem is a physical being. They think Hashem is a physical form. They believe in Hashem. They're worshipping Hashem. They're directing all of their service towards Hashem. Just they have the wrong picture. And Hashem said, "You thought that was me." Now let's take this to an even subtler level. And this is where we're coming on to the approach that we want to take towards approaching the Yemei Hadin. When a person worships Hashem, believes in Hashem, believes that Hashem has no form, believes that there are no other gods, very good. But he thinks that Hashem is out there to get him. He thinks that Hashem is some sort of strict, now Hashem is strict, but he thinks that Hashem is just some sort of cold, strict, you know, Hashem laying down the law and saying, alright, now it's tit for tat. You know, don't expect any help here. Tit for tat, business is business. Did you do it or not? Are you going to do it or not? Hashem stands with his hands behind his back or his hands on his hips, right? And judgment, harsh, strict. And it's all about business. It's all tit for tat. That's also a misconception of who Hashem is. That's also a misconception of who Hashem is. We have to realize, like we were saying, like we've been stressing in previous shiurim, that a big part of being able to begin relating to Hashem is understanding how Hashem relates to you, and understanding that no, we say Hashem is merciful, but even that doesn't quite make the point. Merciful means a person who has mercy, but it's more than that. You have to realize that Hashem relates to you almost like an only child. Hashem is, I'll allow myself to use the terms that Reb Shimshon Pinkus used, even though I think it's a bold way of putting it, but it makes the point. Kiviyachol, Hashem is crazy over you. Kiviyachol, right? Again, I would be scared to spit those words out, but these are terms. I heard Reb Shimshon Pinkus speaking in this way, so I'm simply quoting him. He was able to say these things. But the point is the same. Hashem is deeply, loves you very, very, very deeply. And in fact, any of the love you ever experienced is just a tiny trickle of the love that Hashem has for you. Hashem is focused on you lovingly all the time. Yes, there's a Yom HaDin, and the Yom HaDin is very serious. While at the same time, you have to realize, you're coming to the Yom HaDin, and all of a sudden you discover, right, when you walk in, you see the judge. Your loving father standing with his arms wide open in an embrace. Well, we picture, you know, you come to the Yom HaDin. Well, I managed to convince Hashem to forgive me. You don't have to convince Hashem to forgive you. Hashem wants to forgive you. On the contrary, he's a lot more interested in forgiving you and getting things on track than you are. Yemincha pshuto lekavel shavim. His hand is outstretched in an embrace. Hashem is calling us back. You just start approaching, and I'll make it easy for you. I'll make it work. So you have to approach the Yom HaDin with due solemnity, but the feeling that it's you against Hashem, right? It's just me. Hashem is right there with you, trying to help you make it work. You just have to cooperate with Him. So now, this is the way to approach the Yom HaDin. This is really the way to approach the Yom HaDin. Let's look at the way the Rambam puts it. This is very telling, the way the Rambam defines this. Yes, as we'll see soon, it's important to have both sides of the balance right. On the one hand, to realize the seriousness of it, to realize the urgency to take those steps to better yourself. On the other hand, with the realization that in those steps that I'm taking, Hashem is right there with me, smiling upon me, trying to, doing everything possible to make it work for me, because He wants me. He wants me. In fact, yes, we know, we call these the Yomim Noiroim, right? The awesome days, right? The fearsome days. Noirova Oyoim, right? The fearsome. While at the same time, you know what, the Arizal? The Arizal was the one who really understood what's going on in the highest of places, how it works. So he said that the Yom Noirim is a build-up. He said, Rosh Hashanah is the day that Hashem begins embracing you with His left hand. And then in Yom Kippur, it's with His right hand, that's the even stronger hand. And then, that's why you know, Yom Kippur is the day, let's not confuse things. Rosh Hashanah is the scarier of the 2 days, if we're gonna measure. Yom Kippur is a day of complete love. Kippur is a day that's only shaykh to the Jewish people, right? Rosh Hashanah is Hashem is judging the whole world. And in Kippur, He adds the right hand, which is a much more intense embrace. On Sukkot, it says Hashem is kissing you, right? He's already holding you in His embrace with two hands. It's a build-up. Hashem is kissing you. And this builds up, it's intimacy between us and Hashem, building up until the epitome, the peak of it is in Shmini Atzeres, when it reaches the peak of intimacy, the epitome of love between Hashem and Klal Yisrael. You think of it in these terms, right? That this is actually what the process of the Yomim Noiroim is. That's what we also call it. On the one hand, we call them Yomim Noiroim, awesome days, fearsome days, Yemei Din, days of judgment. And what are they also called? Yemei Harachamim, the days of mercy, right? There's an outpouring of love on these days. There's an outpouring of love on these days that you just have to connect to. Now, connecting to it means approaching it in the right way. Connecting to it means that realizing that Hashem does expect something, maybe a lot of you. But at the end of the day, you have to be approaching with the realization that you're approaching a loving Father who's waiting for you with an open embrace. So we're going to quote the Rambam. The Rambam explains, we don't say Hallel on Rosh Hashanah, right? So listen to this. We don't recite Hallel on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Because these are very serious days, solemn days. He says these are days of service, of subduing ourselves, lowering ourselves, and fear and awe of Hashem. This is very significant. And you have to escape Hashem's wrath in these days. You have to escape Hashem's wrath. Where do you run to escape Hashem's wrath? Rambam says, you escape to Him. Yes, there is such a thing as Hashem's wrath. Where do you go to run away from it? To Hashem. You run to Hashem. You say, Hashem, save me from your wrath. I'm here. I'm throwing myself at you. The way Shimshon Pinkus put it, the mashal was, this is expressed, this lashon is expressed in one of the slichas, where we say, one of the piyutim, which is saying, Mimcha elecha evrach. I escape from you to you. I run away from you to you. Now, what does that mean? That you just make a U-turn? Well, that's not what it means. It means that you run away and you approach it, you approach in a different way. You approach in a different way. You come towards Hashem as, all right, I may have been disappointing you up till now. I may have been angering you up till now. I may have been lacking up till now. But now, I want to throw myself, bow, to ingratiate myself with you again. And Hashem is very interested in this. But here we have to realize that, yes, there are two sides to the coin. So from here, with this realization, I want to go back to what we mentioned last week. Bishul Salanta always points out that paradox, that somehow you see that the people who have more to worry about in the Yom Nirui, the people who have been more deficient throughout the year, more lacking, somehow approach in a much more cavalier, is that how you say it, way. Not too much preparation before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. They're more busy worrying about the menu, right? And kind of slide into the Yom Nirui and slide out. Not much preparation, not much thinking about it, complaining the chul is a little too long, and that's it. Meaning, these are the people that need to be worried, but they feel the most comfortable. And then, somehow you see that the people who are in a better situation somehow are taking it a lot more seriously, and they're much busier trying to better themselves. Rabbi Gamliel used to say the mashal, and the mashal will be quote often, but this is a very, very important mashal in Rukhniyas and spirituality in general. He was once talking about the effects of exposing yourself to foreign influence, right? Of reading all the literature of the outside world, of being a part of the outside world. They said it inevitably compromises a person's spirituality. It's inevitable, you can't get around it. So a woman came over to me afterwards and she said to him, "No, I don't know, I expose myself there all the time and it doesn't affect me at all." So he answered her, "Doesn't affect you. And what happens if there's a car accident, Rahmanu Litzlan? And a car, two people are hit by a car, they both go flying. They both hit the street. And one of them is yelling and screaming in pain, and the other isn't moving and isn't yelling, just lying there quietly. Who's in bigger trouble? Who needs help more urgently? The one who's yelling and screaming in pain can wait the 5 minutes. The one who isn't moving, the one who doesn't feel any pain, is in big trouble. That's the one you have to get to immediately if there's still what to do about it." Right? When a person doesn't feel, when a person already loses their senses, everything's fine. Person's not in pain at all. Right? Not in pain, not aware of anything. Ooh, that person needs help. When a person can come and say confidently, "My spirituality wasn't affected at all," oh boy, that person needs help. That person needs help. Because the more sensitive you are to spirituality, the more aware you are of the different problems, right? The different areas that you, where your shortcomings are, the less sensitive you are to spirituality. So in general, everything's fine. So that's why, yes, in general, a person needs to, if a person wants to be able to claim to be spiritually okay, it's almost like a paradox. You cannot claim to be spiritually healthy unless you can tell me what your spiritual problems are. At any given time, what are your struggles? What are the areas you need to be improving? Nothing? Oh boy, you're in big trouble. And this is fundamental to realize when we're approaching the Yom Nirui. Because here we're getting to the paradox that we were discussing. That on the one hand, you have to approach with the realization that yes, Hashem is there and wants to do it for you. But you have to approach with a deep consciousness of the fact that there's an awful lot to do. Rav Chaim Friedlander was the Rosh Hashi- Mashgiach of Panovich. He wrote, he was Mr. not such an old age from cancer. In the last year of his life, he wasn't in the yeshiva. He was abroad in a hospital in New York. And he wrote a letter that they hung up in the yeshiva in Panovich. And in that letter he wrote, this made a big impact on all the Talmidim. In that letter he wrote, he cited Chazal who say at Kol Shono Shirosha B'Tchilosa Mis Asheres B'Seifa. There's a rule that, right, we say in the Tfilas, Kiroshim U'Kidalim Dofaknu D'Losecha. How do we approach Hashem in the Yom Nirayim? We approach Hashem in the Yom Nirayim like a beggar knocking on the door. A beggar knocks on the door, he knocks on the door humbly, in a subdued way. He doesn't have any demands because he realizes he has nothing coming to him. He realizes he has nothing coming to him and he simply depends on the grace of the man of the house. So Chazal say, Kol Shono Shirosha B'Tchilosa, any year that is poor at its beginning, Mis Asheres B'Seifa, is rich at its end. What does this mean? This means this. It means if you approach, if at the beginning of the year you approach like a pauper, you approach like a poor man, Mis Asheres B'Seifa, it's going to be a rich year, meaning you will succeed in the Yom Kippur. Hashem will grant your requests. What does this mean? What does it mean to approach the Yom Kippur like a poor man? Here, Chaim Friedlander wrote, And he wrote this from his sick bed in New York. And he basically said there are two elements of this. There are two elements to approaching like a poor man. And this is fundamental. We're going to be focusing more on the first, but the second is equally fundamental. He said there are two approaches, if we'll break it down, when a poor man is coming to beg. There are two elements inherent in his plea. First of all, is the fact that I realize that I'm not coming to collect a paycheck. I didn't do anything for you. You owe me nothing. I'm just stealing your time. I'm just imposing on you. What leg do I have to stand on? Right? What basis is there for a poor man to ask you for your money? Does he have anything that he's offering you? He has one basis. Because I've heard that you're a good man, or I hope that you're a good man. I hope that you're a compassionate person. That's number one. Number two is that the poor man approaches, he has nothing. And whatever you're going to give him, that's what he'll have. I'm talking about a destitute person. If you give him enough money for food, he'll have food. You give him enough money to pay the electric bill, he'll have enough money to pay the electric bill also. If you don't, he won't. So these are two elements. Both of these elements manifest when we're approaching Hashem and Rosh Hashanah. So I'll start with the second one, because that's not our main focus, so we'll just present it briefly. The second one is the realization. This was all the more poignant coming from him, lying in his sick bed, right? The realization. We often come, and like we said last time, life is not our main focus, because life we have under our belt. Even though so much of the tefillah is focused on Chaim, what's on our wish list for this year, Rosh Hashanah? Most people won't consciously put life on the list. I need a shidduch for this one, I need parnasa for that, I have a deal that I want to go through, all kinds of additions. But life I have, a home I have, a marriage I have, right? Children I have. Those things I don't need to be busy with now. I ask Hashem to keep my children in good health. Alright, we'll put that at the end of the list also. That's a good thing, right? But that's not what's on your mind. I have all kinds of things. There's a few things I need more. Then I'm coming and asking Hashem for. I want to raise this year. Right? I want a license to expand my house a little bit. The house I have already. He says, no, you approach with the realization that you have nothing at all. Everything that you have is because Hashem is constantly sustaining it. You have a home? We've seen over the last couple of years that people can lose their home in an instant. Life? We've been seeing since the beginning of time that people can lose life in an instant. Right? All kinds of things that you take for granted. You have to realize that you're coming now and asking Hashem, the more you can work backwards and say, Hashem, I take nothing for granted. I need everything from you, beginning with life. I'm alive today, not because I was alive yesterday and nothing happened. That's not why I'm alive today. You're not alive because nothing happened, you're alive because something happened. You're alive because Hashem keeps generating life in you. Yes, Hashem, keep on doing that. Yes, I want life, and I want a home, and I want a happy marriage, and I want nachas for my children. And once you do give me parnasa, I'd like a little more parnasa. Yes, Hashem, for whatever you want. So that's point number one. You come. Point number two. You come with the approach that I have nothing, and Hashem, I need everything from you from scratch. So Avigdor Miller used to say that this is really the focus. The point is to drive home the realization that it's not like you have this and that's that. Hashem is giving you these things on a regular basis. And the fact that you had it yesterday doesn't mean that inevitably you'll necessarily have it today. That's what he used to say, Avigdor Miller used to say, Yedavin Rifa'enu, right? Right now nobody's sick, so you kind of gloss over that bracha. No, you know how many things on any given day, all the complexity of the systems that are running, how many potentials there are for things to go wrong? Why aren't they going wrong? Because Hashem is keeping it up. You daven to Hashem, you say, Hashem, I realize that the only reason I'm healthy today is because you kept my systems going. Please continue doing that. The more you internalize that awareness, the more of a right you have. Right. There's no rights. The more of a leg you have to stand on. But Now we'll go back to the first point. And the first point is that yes, a pauper approaches with the realization that he has no leg to stand on. And this is the approach to the end of their mind. It's like we said before, when a person feels, I'm pretty much okay spiritually. I'm pretty much okay spiritually, so I can approach you at Rosh Hashanah comfortably, right? You're in a dangerous situation, because then Hashem will say, as we said before, the person feels I'm pretty much okay. Yeah, I haven't had many issues lately. Yetzer Hara is never asleep, like the Chavis Halavah says. Yetzer Hara is never asleep. He's always on the job. He's always on the job. If you're not aware of the Yetzer Hara, it means you're numb. It means that he already has you under his belt, and there are things that you think are not even an issue anymore. Right? That's it. He's got his in with you, and that's that. You're not conscious of the fact that you speak freely. You're not conscious of the fact that 40% of the things that you say that just roll out of your mouth are mamish piling up averus wholesale. You're so used to it that it became natural. You say hurtful words. You get annoyed at your kids. Your kids, by all the halachas of my other machaneri, apply to our kids and to our spouses as well. Right? Lashon hara. All these things, if a person is not conscious of these things are generated on a wholesale basis. And that's just one example. When a person approaches with the realization that no, I know that I have a lot of shortcomings. I know that I have a lot of shortcomings. I really have no leg to stand on. That is what actually gives you your hope. If you can approach Hashem this way, what are you saying to Hashem when you say that? What is your basis to ask for anything? The answer is, you're telling Hashem, but I know that you love me and I know that you want it to work. I know that you're merciful. You tell Hashem that, and Hashem wants to work with you. Hashem wants to work with you. On the contrary, this is the greatest way of ingratiating yourself with Hashem. Now, so that's why, again, often people stop there. They stop becoming very aware of all the shortcomings and the faults, etc. They just get so depressed. How can I ever make it to the end of my life? Now you have to take it a step further, and you say exactly on the contrary. That's the beauty of it. The beauty of it is that realization that I have those faults is my ticket to getting through the Yom Neroim okay. On the contrary, if you were approaching the Yom Neroim feeling, well, you know what, I really took this all seriously and I'm okay now. That's it, I'm ready to approach Rosh Hashanah confidently. Yeah, I had one or two spiritual problems before Elul. I worked on it on Elul, knocked them out, and now I'm set up. Oh no. This person is in a precarious situation on Rosh Hashanah. But when, on the contrary, the more a person realizes, oh, now that I've really started thinking about it, I see that there are a lot of things I better get busy with. So then, despair starts creeping in. No, here's the mistake. On the contrary, now realize that you're ready to approach the Eim Adin. Now realize that I'm ready to come and tell Hashem, Hashem, I have nothing to say to you. But I know that you work that way. That you're willing to take me anyways. That you have more rachmanis than I can conceive and I would have on somebody if it were me who had to relate to somebody in this sort of situation. That is the best way to approach Hashem on Rosh Hashanah. That's what Chazal mean when they talk about the Shana Shirasha B'Tirasa. So on the contrary, in order to be able to approach Hashem this way, we have to start on the contrary. Figuring out where are the areas that we need to be improving and getting a very, very good picture of it. Why? Because once again, for the purpose of starting to work on these areas, it's not enough to come to Hashem and say, all right, Hashem, I know my shortcomings. Say, look, I've got a whole bunch of shortcomings. Isn't that great? Okay, so now give me a good year and I'll make sure to keep these shortcomings up for next Rosh Hashanah also. No, don't worry. If you're a serious worker, on the contrary, the more spiritually conscientious you are, there will always be those shortcomings. You'll work on these this year, you'll progress, you'll get ahead, and next year you'll be dealing with a higher level of shortcomings. That's good. That's good. On the contrary, our shortcomings are our blessing. Right? That's what provides us with our purpose in this world. As neshamas, we were perfect beings. We didn't have those shortcomings. Hashem attached shortcomings and faults and problems to us in this world in order to give us an area to draw ourselves close to Him through our own efforts. Right? We're naturally close to Hashem. The Jewish neshama is the closest thing to Hashem that there is. We, each of us inherently, is the closest thing to Hashem that there is. But Hashem said, I want to raise you even higher than I made you. How could Jewish neshama be rising and higher than Hashem made it? And the answer is by becoming the closest thing to Hashem through your own efforts. So what did Hashem do? Hashem distanced you a little bit. How did He distance you? He gave you this fault, that fault, all these different faults, all the different human failings are things that constitute barriers between us and Hashem. And Hashem says, okay, I pushed you back a bit. Now start pushing yourself back towards me. So as long as we're working on our faults and our shortcomings, they're our gift. That would give us the means to becoming the greatest creature they could possibly be. Even greater than Hashem made us, Kiviyachol. That's how Hashem set it up. We can make ourselves greater than Hashem made us by reaching that state of closeness through our own efforts. But once again, the key to that is being aware of those shortcomings. So when a person becomes aware of his shortcomings and he becomes depressed, he becomes discouraged, etc., he's missing a whole dimension of the picture. He's missing the fact that, on the contrary, the shortcomings are your means to achieving your purpose in this world. And that, on the contrary, your awareness of your shortcomings is what ingratiates you with Hashem. That's what ingratiates you with Hashem. That's what makes Hashem say, "Ah, this is a person I want to have compassion on. This is a person who's not approaching presumptuously. This is a person who knows where he stands, he's honest with himself, and he's ready to take it on. He's ready to keep on moving." That's what gives us the means to get ahead. So, therefore, certainly, on the contrary, yes, we realize our shortcomings, but we're ready to take them on. And we tell Hashem, look, I know that if you're really going to be, like we keep saying in the tefillah, if Hashem will be done, if He'll judge us, l'fishur asadin, according to the strict measure of the law, nobody will make it. Why? Because Hashem set things up that everybody's always going to have their shortcomings, and that everyone's going to always have their faults. But I realize that, I don't kid myself, and I tell Hashem, that's right, this is how I'm presenting myself to you, because I know that you love me, and I know that you set up the system this way. Forgive me for a minute, I just lost my train of thought, but we'll get it back in a minute. Okay. Now, we come back to, just a second, I'm sorry, I got confused. But okay, we come back to what we started with, or what we brought up in the middle. And that is that he said even more than that, Ezra, we're going back to that pasuk. Ezra said, Chedvas Hashem Hima Uzchem. Chedvas Hashem Hima Uzchem. Rejoicing with Hashem is where you can gain your security. Meaning again, like we said before, what happened? People suddenly had it thrown in their faces, quite how far they were, and quite what they had to work on. And all of a sudden they started getting down, right? And Ezra told them, on the contrary, by rejoicing on Rosh Hashanah, this is your means to success. This is where you can take refuge. What did he mean by that? Up till now we're talking about, yes, understanding that, on the contrary, the beauty of it is that Hashem will dafka have compassion on you through the fact that you are ready to say, Hashem, I have nothing to stand on other than your kindness. But where does that turn into celebration? Where does that turn into rejoicing? Where do you get from there to a yomtiv? So here we have to understand another deeper element of what's actually happening in Rosh Hashanah. And this, Bezus Hashem, we're going to focus more on this next week, I hope, Bezus Hashem, but I want to at least bring it up now because it's really all one subject. What's going on Rosh Hashanah on a deeper level? It's the Yom HaDin. It's the Yom HaDin. Why is it the Yom HaDin? So on a deeper level, the truth is that we know that what's going on Rosh Hashanah is, and this is really what the whole focus on Rosh Hashanah is, that is very, all the tefillos of Rosh Hashanah, there isn't all that much focus on the Din as much as on what we call Malchus Shamayim, the kingship of Hashem. That's really the main focus on Rosh Hashanah. You look at the tefillos, right? The tefillos of Rosh Hashanah are full of that. course, Yemadin also plays a prominent role, but it's secondary to this element of Malchus Shamayim. Hashem is taking the throne. Rosh Hashanah is a coronation of Hashem. That's what's going on Rosh Hashanah. This is really the main focus of Rosh Hashanah. Crowning Hashem as king. Now, why is that Yom Hadin? Because the truth is, what does it mean you crown Hashem as king? Who was king yesterday? You're crowning Hashem today as king. Who was king yesterday? Who was king before you should crown Hashem? You crowned Hashem already last year. But the answer is, and here it's also a little bit of a deeper point. It's not just that we're crowning Hashem as king anew, but the truth is that all of existence is beginning anew. Hashem begins his world anew on Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, it follows naturally that A, Rosh Hashanah is the coronation of Hashem. Hashem creates a world. The automatic result of that is that Hashem rules over his world. Right? Right? We say in Adon Elam, at the time that everything came into existence through his will, Azai Melech Shemay Nikra, then he was called king. So on Rosh Hashanah, the world is beginning anew, and therefore the first thing that we declare is Hashem Melech. That's the first and most obvious element of an existence, a world. Now, the second obvious result is that automatically it's going to be Yom Hadin, because if Hashem is creating a world, he's going to be creating the roles in his world. Who's going to be playing a role in that world? Who's going to be a part of his new world? Of course, it's the Yom Hadin. Hashem is reviewing the data, the information, right? And then he's going to be allotting the different roles in this world. And that's why, yes, Rosh Hashanah turns into a Yom Hadin. But now, picture a coronation. Coronation is a very, very grand event. The truth is, you look in the tefillos of Rosh Hashanah, you see what a grand event it is. Right? See what a big deal it is. The way we describe it in the Pesukim is Yismachu HaShemayim V'Sogei La'oretz, right? The heavens rejoice, the earth is rejoicing. Yiram Hayomum Loya Yalus Hasad Chol HaShoboy. The sea is thundering in excitement. All of nature, all of creation is busy applauding. Long live the king. If you go to a coronation, I don't know, there's no Englishman here now, but I don't know if you ever see such a ceremony in America. And the truth is, as we've discussed, the truth is the lack of monarchy in today's times has compromised our appreciation of what true kingship really means, and it's taken down to an extent the way we're able to relate to Hashem. But yes, the coronation is a very, very grand affair, and the entire nation is celebrating, at least officially. Right? At least officially. Is everybody really celebrating? I don't know. Well, different people, depending on the king's policies, there'll probably be some people who are a little bit apprehensive, right? There'll probably be some people who are not expecting a good time now. There might be different ministers, different officials, who know that they didn't do so well with this prince, and now that he's becoming the king. But everybody has a smile on their face. The coronation, at least officially, is a very happy event. It's a celebration, right? But who's really celebrating? Who are the true celebrants of the coronation of the king? The true celebrants of the coronation of the king are the king's family. Right? They are just going wild with excitement. They're going wild with excitement. For them, it's just exciting. Their father is becoming king. Right? The king's immediate family, I don't know about his brothers, that's often a different story. Right? At least in real monarchies, they sometimes had what to worry about. But the king's children, right? The king's children, they're the chief celebrants. So here on Rosh Hashanah, when we come to this element of crowning Hashem as king, and here we move everything we've been discussing about, I told you in the beginning, from a cold day of judgment into understanding that no, it's a very warm day of judgment, but here we move it up to the level of celebration. The more we are able to connect to the coronation of Hashem and to feel that this is my personal celebration. Rosh Hashanah is a great day for me. Why? Because my Hashem is becoming king. When I know how much Hashem loves me, how much I need to Hashem, and that Hashem is now being crowned as king. We can well understand that the more a person feels that way, the more tight he is with Hashem, and the more confident he can feel that for him, the coronation of Hashem is indeed a happy day. And this is basically what Ezra is telling them. You all have your shortcomings, right? Ezra tells the people in Eretz Yisrael at the time. They were assimilated. They were full of sins. They had a lot of things that they needed to improve, and they were starting to do so. They had a lot of things that they needed to change. And therefore, when Rosh Hashanah came around, everybody was weeping. But what did Ezra tell them? Ezra told them, no, the way to start off on the right foot is, yes, you have all kinds of things you need to fix. That's right. But number one is realize, this is not a sad day. It's only a sad day if you're a stranger, right? If you're a stranger, and you know that you have a few criminal offenses, and the king is going to be trying you, the coronation of the king is a sad day. But on the contrary, on the coronation of the king, if you see people weeping, you have to be suspicious of them. Maybe you should start investigating. Why is he so sad? Maybe he's got something to hide, right? On the contrary, the more you can celebrate on this day means that inherently you are indeed associating yourself with Hashem in the same way He associates with you. You view yourself as a beloved child of Hashem, and you view Hashem as your beloved Father. If so, yes, you've got all your faults, but you're in the right place. And it's your Father, it's not a stranger, it's your Father. Of course He'll deal with you patiently. And you'll be able to work at it. And He'll help you do what it takes to be able to make it. So therefore, on the contrary, if we come to Rosh Hashanah just sad, dressed in black clothing, etc., you're approaching Hashem as a stranger. You really do have a big list of criminal offenses. You have to wonder where you're going to get. But if you're approaching Hashem as a celebrant, Hashem, your coronation is a day of great simcha for me, that is a very great insurance. That's why it's like Ezra is saying, Chedvas Hashem hima uzchem, rejoicing with Hashem is a way of protecting yourself. You know, if you think of it that way, again, you're not going to. The point is to reach a celebration, to reach a level where you really naturally feel that celebration. I understand who Hashem is to me, what I mean to Hashem, and therefore the fact that He is being crowned as King now is a very, very great celebration for me. I sit down with my family around the table. Right, and you sit down at the end of the day, the table is full of delicacies on Rosh Hashanah. You sit down around the family with the table, and you say, we are now celebrating the coronation of our Father as King. We're all dressed in our Shabbos best, because we are the immediate family of the King who's being crowned today. And therefore, we're sitting around the table to rejoice and to celebrate. So again, just to sum up, there's that balance. On the one hand, in order for it to work, you do have to be aware of where you have to move ahead, of what the shortcomings are, what the faults are, what needs to be fixed. But then, to approach it not with, oh, so with all these faults, where can I ever get? On the contrary, now I'm capable of approaching Hashem in the right way and saying, I know Hashem, but I can't approach you as an ordinary judge. Because as an ordinary judge, I'm in big trouble. The only way I can approach you is as a loving Father. As a loving Father, and therefore I can approach you. That's the beauty of it. I can approach you with the realization that I don't have a leg to stand on, because when it's a Father, I can do that. And that's why we should be encouraged by the words we keep seeing in the tefillahs, Chaneinu v'aneinu ke'en banu ma'asim. Have mercy upon us, because we don't have enough deeds to justify a favorable verdict. On the contrary, that's what's built into the tefillah. That's what the whole day is based on. These words are encouraging rather than depressing. But then, of course, you have to follow up, taking a serious stock of, okay, yes, shortcomings are a part of my purpose, but certainly not to keep those same shortcomings your whole life at the same level. No, you have to be very seriously working to spot them, to identify them, and to be approaching Hashem with plans. Yes, I'm not going to become perfect overnight, but I have plans, I'm going to start working on it. I am going to go about that business of trying to draw closer to you through my own means, by my own efforts. So identify those things. What are the areas that I need to improve in? Where do I need to be growing more? And then we can talk to say, Chedras Hashem Yimo Uzchem, rejoicing with Hashem is what provides us with our sense of security. And this will be the means of being Zeicha to Aksiru L'Chasimatoyu.